since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1218. This is your host, Danny Pena, and joining me for this episode of GTR is Paris Lilly. What's up, Paris?
Hey, man. Good morning. How you doing?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Originally I sent you a list of topics, and then we looked at each other like, we don't want to talk about that stuff. Because I feel like everybody else is talking about it. So I'm like, nah, man. Let's.
Can we say what it is that we don't really want to talk about?
If you want.
Yeah. It's the financial numbers that came out for both Xbox and PlayStation.
Yeah.
Okay. It's fine. Whatever. What are we going to debate? There's nothing to really debate about it. And if anything, all people are doing is using it to just argue about nonsense online. So, we'd rather not talk about it. If you want to see the sales numbers and how you think it might affect you, there's plenty of other places that have posted and talked about it.
Yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, we're still here.
Yeah.
It's a lot of great games, a lot of options. The business is not going anywhere. We've seen this multiple times throughout the year, so I don't know. I don't know what was the conversation about, like, honestly. So I'm like, I thought about it today. I'm like, we could talk about better things, man. You know, so it's all good.
I agree. Completely agree. Now, something I was going to bring up, I was going to give you a heads up, but I'm just going to bring it up on the show here. So you actually saw the tweet where I gave my 2 cents, but... You know, and I'm not going to reference the silly tweet because, again, all it is console war fanboy nonsense. But
it brings
up an interesting point that I do want to talk about here. There was a tweet that wondered aloud, what would the industry look like if Xbox never existed? Fine. Hmm. And you can apply this if PlayStation never existed, if Nintendo never existed, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And my response to that was, because, again, it was... intended to be some console war childish nonsense, but it made me think, if Xbox did not exist, if that never happened, where would we be today? And in my opinion, I want to be clear here, in my opinion,
yes,
you'd be looking at $100+ games. You'd probably be looking at damn near $1,000 console. A lot of the services and some of the innovations that we've seen the past 20 years probably don't happen. The budgets for the games that we are getting probably would be half of what they are today. No, you want, it's about competition. It is the competition that we have seen over the past 20 years that has driven a lot of the amazing games and the things that we've seen in this industry. A lot of the services that we've seen in this industry. It's about competition. And again, people can argue online, have whatever opinion they want, which is fine. But you cannot sit here and tell me. And again, we'll just use Xbox as an example. If Xbox never happened in 2001, where do you think this industry would be? We already know Nintendo will make you double, triple, quadruple dip on their back catalog of games. So they would have had zero incentive to ever create any type of subscription service, online capabilities, any of that. We would be getting more. We would have the N64. You'd have the GameCube. Do you really think they would have innovated and made the Nintendo Wii? If that happened, which then has led us to what we have today with the Nintendo Switch, probably not. When you think about PlayStation back then, yes, PlayStation 2 was king, obviously amazing games. What was the next thing they did in 2006? They tried to charge you $600 for their PlayStation 3. And Ken Kutaragi even said, you need to go get a second job to play our system. Mm-hmm. Why didn't that succeed? It didn't succeed because Xbox had pushed the 360 out a year before and it was damn near half the price, which in turn, people were like, well, I ain't going to spend $600 on that PlayStation 3. And it forced PlayStation to adjust and lower their price. Right. Let's flip it now to again talking about PlayStation. So What happened in 2013, which is to this day still one of the biggest moments we've had in gaming history? You had Xbox get arrogant, try to charge us $500 for that microwave Xbox One, and the whole DRM, the used game, that whole strategy that they were going to do in 2013. And what did PlayStation do just a few hours later? They came out and said, nah, $100 less, you can still do used games. The rest is history, right? It's because of the competition. I remember when PlayStation Plus first came out and they started saying, all right, we're going to give you free games every month. What happened? Microsoft had to adjust and they started putting free games on Xbox Live Gold. So don't sit here. Oh, and let's take it all the way back to 2001 with Xbox Live. So, or 2002, I should say, with Xbox Live, because of Xbox Live and because you had a game like Halo, which then spurred other online games like Ghost Recon at the time. What was it? Mech Warrior, things like that. We got console online gaming became a reality versus what we were seeing on PC prior to that, which then spurred PlayStation to what? Create an adapter that you had to plug into your PlayStation 2 so you could start doing online gaming for that. And again, this also goes back to the original roots of the Dreamcast. Let's not forget that. But the reason I kind of omit the Dreamcast is, guess what? Dreamcast failed. And if Xbox did not step in, you wouldn't have had that third tier of competition, because Sega was the competition back in the 90s, right? With the Genesis, and obviously came with the Saturn and all that. But the Dreamcast failed. So if Dreamcast goes away, what was going to fill the gap? If Xbox does not come in to fill that gap, PlayStation has zero incentive to do any of the things that they did over the past 20 years. I'll take it this way. Do you think you have God of War 2018 if there was no competition from Xbox? I don't think so. I honestly, truly sit here today and don't think so. I think you would have got just the same generic sequel after sequel after sequel. They can raise the price. It's $80, $90, $100 because there's no incentive for them to compete for your dollar. There's no incentive for them to try and innovate on the gaming side. Of course, there's going to be developers out there. They have all these creative ideas. We clearly see that on the indie side. But when we talk the big AAA games, if I'm PlayStation, again, just as an example, you could flip this and call it Xbox in the same scenario. If I'm Xbox or PlayStation and the other doesn't exist, what's my incentive to go give you $100 million budget to make this big AAA game when I can give you half of that? You make a game with half the features in it, and guess what? It's still going to stay the same. And not to mention, I could probably charge you $80 or $90 for that same game. Mm-hmm. You're going to buy it because what other choice do you have? Nintendo, in this scenario, they do them. They make things that only work on their system, and they're going to triple charge you to play their legacy catalog, right? There is no PlayStation Plus right now. There is, again, flip it to Xbox. There ain't no Game Pass right now. If PlayStation didn't exist, why? Because Microsoft would have zero incentive to try and get you to come into their ecosystem. Do you think they're really doing cloud gaming and all this other stuff right now? All these other features that we're seeing, do you really think their console that we see right now with the PlayStation 5 or flip it on the Series X has these SSD drives in it and they're trying to do all these things that, again, are promoting power? Hell, we're probably still on 1080p right now. We probably ain't even doing 4K on consoles. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, you can flip this, what I'm saying, and people can argue, oh, the console war and the Xbox and the PlayStation, blah, 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 blah. I don't really care. I'm just telling you the reality of what gaming potentially would be looking like if you did not have competition. It's about the competition. You don't get the value in gaming right now if you don't have a competitor that is pushing you to try and compete for the dollar, to try and get that consumer to come into your ecosystem. You don't have that right now if you don't have a PlayStation or an Xbox to compete against each other. It's just the truth. And if you don't believe me, again, go back and look at just the history. Every time we've seen something innovative in the gaming space, it's because there was a competitor pushing them to do so. It's just how it is. So that's my opening shot of our random talk.
I think that's a great conversation to start, because I had this conversation yesterday with Miles, because I was on Xbox Chatter Days. Shout out to him. And we were talking about like competition and everything like that, man. And if you think about it, Paris, like how Xbox completely change online gaming in 2002, right? Especially with like games like Halo 2, there would have been no matchmaking. A lot of games have matchmaking nowadays, right?
Yeah.
Not only that, because of that, PlayStation completely changed the way how online gaming for PlayStation 2, right? Plus, you get two free games if you're part of the subscription service of PlayStation Plus, the old PlayStation Plus, right? Xbox during that time, there was no free games on Xbox Live Gold at all. But because of competition, Xbox did the same exact thing. Because of that, I feel that's the reason why we have Xbox Game Pass. Because of the competition, things were just the same. The competition was doing a lot better with the features and free games and everything. But now, why not subscribe? And now you get options of a bunch of other games that's going to be available there with just one monthly payment. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
There's so many things that we could think about, man. Like, even I'm even going to take it even deeper than that, Paris. The reason why Dreamcast failed was because PlayStation 2 had a DVD player that got a lot of the casual. Yeah, of course, the games and bootlegs and all that. But I'm talking about EA too. But I'm talking about more of like the casual gamer. They'd rather buy a system just to play consoles or buy a system that has both. You could watch movies and play games, right? Mm-hmm. But because of that, if you think about it, Paris, there would have been no Netflix on Xbox 360 because that was the first console that actually started the whole streaming service of watching movies in the early days of Netflix back in the days, man. Like, there's different reasons that companies will add certain things in these systems because it will make them, like you said, make change people's minds for them to buy that product or whatever it is because of the competition that doesn't have. So, like, let's say that and so on. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's another one too. We had Major Nelson on XCast during episode 100, and I had even brought up to him, I remember the podcast that he did, that had been, 05, 06, whenever that was, where he talked about the HD DVD add-on for the 360. Ooh, and remember,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. But the point of that is, because the PlayStation 3, this must have been 06, because the PlayStation 3 was coming out with what? Blu-ray at the time. So Microsoft gambled, we're going to bet on the competition, which was HD DVD, and we're going to have this add-on for the 360. Again, it's the competitive nature of that. If PlayStation doesn't exist and there's no Blu-ray drive on their console, Xbox ain't putting no HD DVD add-on on a 360. There would be no reason for them to do so. Why? You're going to buy the damn thing anyways. They're doing it because they realize that Blu-ray drive, just like you're talking about the DVD drive in the PlayStation 2, was an incentive to get people to go pick up that console and to ultimately invest in that ecosystem. This is what I'm talking about. It's about when you see one do one thing, there's going to be a reaction from the other. It's how it works because it is a competition. So they're constantly going to be trying to one up each other. Again, let's take it to where we are right now today. You can love Game Pass, hate Game Pass, whatever. It really doesn't matter. But Sony reacted to Game Pass. If you don't think the PlayStation Plus with these tiers isn't a reaction to what Microsoft did with Game Pass, you're fooling yourself. It is a reaction 100%. To it, because why would PlayStation do it? There would be no reason for them to do it if Xbox didn't exist and there wasn't this subscription service on your competition. They realized we need something. It doesn't have to be day and date with our new games. We still think there's value in that. But guess what? We're going to charge you to try and play our back catalog. So here comes this subscription service to kind of lure you in. And again, I guess I will, you know, talk a little bit about the revenue, the quarterly statements that we saw. Mm-hmm. The subscription service is a direct result of that. We saw a reduction on people buying games at retail. Well, you don't know why? There's more value in the subscription service. I'd rather go do that. We're starting to see that now. Yeah, exactly.
And it's cheaper.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, it's competition. Whether you like it or not, whether you love PlayStation, you love Xbox, you love ColecoVision, it doesn't matter. It's competition. And competition is always going to drive the competitor to do something to one up the other. You, again, there's all these examples throughout history that we've seen that. If you don't think the Super Nintendo wasn't created as a result of Sega having the Master System in the Genesis, you're fooling yourself. Of course it was. Nintendo would not have made the Super Nintendo with 16-bit when they did if there wasn't a competitor in Sega. They realized, oh crap, we need to innovate. Because they would have stressed the NES. Hell, the NES probably would have still be going if there was no competition, right? They would have just continued to do it. But they saw, oh my God, Sega is coming into this market and there's real competition here. What do you think started the console wars? It was Sega and Nintendo back then.
Sega and Nintendo.
And then what did Nintendo also want to do? They wanted to partner up with Sony. I forget the whole history behind that. It was Sony wanted, vice versa. But obviously Sony came into it because they were going to do something with Nintendo. That didn't work out. And Sony says, you know what? We'll do it ourselves.
Yeah.
That was the PlayStation. Sega then saw that and go, oh, crap, we need to do something. That created the Saturn. And it didn't work, obviously. Then they went with the Dreamcast. That didn't work for various reasons. And then the PlayStation 2 came in and they one up what the N64 was doing at the DVD drive. Then what Nintendo do? Oh, we need to do something. All right, let's create the GameCube. Xbox comes into it. They go, we're going to put a hard drive in here. We're going to have the DVD drive in it. But we're also going to do this thing called Xbox Live and we're going to let people play online. It escalates, keeps escalating. PlayStation had to counter that. Then Xbox says, you know what? We need to one up the PlayStation 2 and we need to get ahead of the PlayStation 3. We're going to kill the original Xbox short and we're going to launch the 360 quick in 2005 because we want to get ahead of PlayStation coming out with the PlayStation 3. PlayStation was arrogant. You know what? We charge whatever the hell we want. $600 if you want it. That didn't work. Crap. Lower the price. Now we scale it back down because we need to compete. And then by the time you got to the end of that generation, you started to see PlayStation Plus happen. You obviously saw the innovative games that started coming out. You saw these other services. Microsoft had to react to that, vice versa. Xbox One, PlayStation 4, we saw this whole generation. Now here we are. It is competition. Whether you like it or not, they need each other. They absolutely do. Or we would not have half the damn things that we have right now if we didn't have that competition.
I'll bring something else that I just remembered. Remember when games was so expensive back then?
Yep.
Yep. Especially during the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, N64 era, right? But what was the change that happened during that time? PlayStation releasing games on discs. Do you remember that? And it was a lot cheaper for developers to make games. They're like, why are we going to make a game for Nintendo 64? That's going to be more expensive. Let's make games for the PlayStation, have it on a disc, and these will be a lot cheaper. And we can make more income with that. What happened with that, Paris? Now every company started making games on disc. And it was because of PlayStation. Originally, like you were saying, it was supposed to be PlayStation and Nintendo together, right? PlayStation and Nintendo together to create a console. And PlayStation, like, you know what? F it. It's not working out. We're going to do our own thing. And look, a huge success for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So companies, like you said, yeah, competition is very, very important. At the end of the day, this right here, the Steam Deck, what we have here, if it wasn't for the Wii U or for the Nintendo Switch, there would have been no Steam Deck, dude. There would have been no Steam Deck. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, it's beneficial for us as consumers to see competition because now all these companies are battling it out. Friendly competition is not, you know, like a real battle, but they battle it out and we have the option like, man, we should go with this one. This one is cheaper. There's more games. There's more stuff. There's more features. And that's the thing that I love about seeing competition. Like, look, if it wasn't for Xbox being in second or third place, all these changes that Phil Spencer has been making and his team, we would have not seen that at all, man. I'm glad that 2013, that thing happened where PlayStation announced the cheaper price the same day that the Xbox One price came out. None of this thing would have been happening, dude.
None of it would be happening right now. And that's, like I said, even look at where we are right now today. Do you really think PlayStation is acquiring Bungie for $3 billion and leaning more into live service games and all that? Because they realize this, the market landscape has changed with subscription services and all that. And it's about engagement with your games and microtransactions, all this other stuff that they got to pivot. They have to pivot and change what they're doing. Let's take it this way. Do you really think PlayStation games are on PC right now if there wasn't competition? Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course. And look, again, I don't want to argue all the silly console war nonsense, but I've said in the past, and I will die on this hill, if you don't think we will eventually get to a world where PlayStation games are day and date on PC, you're fooling yourself, because you're starting to see it right now. You can't turn a battleship on a dime. It takes time to get there. Slowly but surely, you're going to start to see that window of when a game is on a PlayStation to when it's on PC is going to just keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller until the point where it's day and date. I actually saw a tweet yesterday, which I thought made a lot of sense to me. And this could be the strategy where they think the live service games, the multiplayer games that will come out of PlayStation, you put those on PC day one because you want the biggest audience you possibly can for your multiplayer games, you know, with the DLCs and all that stuff to play and, you know, the battle passes and all that because it generates so much money. So you're going to probably see that first day and date. And then you may see the more single player stuff like a God of War, Last of Us, stuff like that. There might be a 3 to 6 month window before they show up on PC. I think that makes sense. I could actually see that scenario being the way for PlayStation. Obviously, Xbox has leaned all the way in. Everything is day one across all their platforms that they show up on. But I could see that being the strategy for PlayStation. And could that happen in the next few years? Abso-frickin-lutely, it could. Clearly, with this Bungie acquisition, we've already seen there wasn't even a thought they're going to stay multi-platform. They're going to be everywhere because that makes the most money for PlayStation. Right. Again, people got to understand at the end of the day, despite your loyalties and your preferences and all that stuff as a fan, as a consumer, the bottom line for these companies is making money. It's about making money. What can we do as a company to maximize our profit? So the way this landscape is working now is it's get your games on as many platforms as you possibly can, because that exposes that same game to the maximum number of people. Why would you limit at this point in 2022? Why would I limit my game to one system, especially in this current market where it's hard to get said system? Why would I limit it to that when I could put it on a PC? I can put it in the cloud. I could put it on mobile. I'm exposing it to more people. Again, this is where the competition comes in, because look, like it or not, Xbox started all this in 2016. And remember me, I was one of the harshest critics of what Xbox had been doing with the Xbox One era until 2016, when I was like, I see what they're doing. I get it now. Mm-hmm. And look, and they're still not 100% there. Clearly, obviously, there's delays with their games. They still got to get the games out. We know that. But they started building the infrastructure so that they could pivot to this model that we're seeing right now, where their games come on their consoles, they come on the PC, and they're in the cloud, which allows you to play them on any mobile device that's cloud, you know, internet connected, right? It took a long time to get to that point to where they are. Now, do they have the games internally to support all that? No, because there's been a lot of delays and they need to answer those questions going into 2023, of course. But PlayStation clearly didn't have that same idea in 2016. They're starting to pivot to that now. And, you know, one of the stories you had in there, why do you think they partnered with Backbone for that controller? Why do you think they did that? Why do you think there is a PlayStation branded Backbone controller for a mobile device? Because they see the opportunity and the revenue to have their games on mobile devices via the cloud with PlayStation Now. Don't think this isn't about money at the end of the day. Don't think this isn't about getting as many people into your ecosystem as possible. Xbox had already started doing that a few years ago, and people laughed and giggled and said, oh, they don't make no sense. Why are they doing that?
They're desperate.
Now you're seeing PlayStation doing the same thing. And this isn't an aha, gotcha moment or whatever. It's just the reality of where this industry is going. Why wouldn't they do that? It makes the most sense, because as I was saying a few years ago when people were getting mad when I was saying it about PC, it does not hurt you as a gamer to have Spider-Man as an example on PC. Why? You're already playing it. You've already enjoyed it. Now someone who would never go buy a PlayStation now has an opportunity to play a PlayStation game on PC, and they make more money. What games have you seen topping the charts on Steam the last year or so? It's been PlayStation games, because people now have the opportunity to play a God of War, right? They have the opportunity to play a Horizon Zero Dawn on PC and take advantage of all the technical features that a PC gives you. And like I said, Spider-Man's about to come out. We know the Last of Us Part 1 is about to be on there. I'll bet you cash money a year from now we're talking about Horizon Forbidden West on a PC, right? Returnal, on down the line. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because competition has driven PlayStation to go do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, you can love Xbox, you can love PlayStation or whatever. It's fine, because you as a gamer, if you prefer to play on a console, you can continue to do that and enjoy all the games that you've had. And that's the other part of this too, which I even said at the beginning. If you don't think competition has kept the prices of console hardware down to where it is, you're fooling yourself again. I'm telling you right now, if there was only an Xbox or if there was only a PlayStation, this Series X or this PlayStation 5, it would at least be $100, if not $1,000 right now. Don't tell me it wouldn't, because if you look at the parts that take to make these consoles comparative to what you see on a PC, you ain't building these things for less than $1,000 on the PC side. And the only reason that you're seeing them at the prices that they are is competition. Mm-hmm. It's just the truth. So be glad. Yeah. Again, be glad there's an Xbox. Be glad there's a PlayStation, because of the fact that they're directly competing with each other, we're the ones that get the value out of this. Again, with these consoles, there ain't no Xbox Series S at $299 if there wasn't a PlayStation 5. Because Xbox saw, well, if we had a lower price console, we can get it into more homes, because it's going to be more affordable for families, and we can provide enough of the quote unquote next gen gaming features on this that there would be an incentive to want to go pick it up. And again, these financial numbers that came out bear that out. Various reasons, obviously the shortages and all that too, but the Series S isn't some undesirable device. It's something that people have brought into their homes and they use. Hell, It is the primary machine my kids play on, despite me having the Series X in the house as well. They'd rather play on the S because it's more convenient and they don't care about 4K and all that. And there's a lot of families that deal with that as well. But to the original point, that exists because there's competition. And they knew they needed a lower price device to compete. That's what it comes down to. And I think people need to realize that.
And I have to say this. I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo does the same exact thing and start releasing games on the PC in the future. I could see that happening, because they did the same thing with mobile. I mean, it didn't really work out for Nintendo, but I could see in the future where maybe they could launch their own eShop for the PC, or maybe have those games available for like partnering with like Epic Game Store or Steam. I could see that in the future with Nintendo, man. That's because, honestly speaking, Paris, that's more money for the company. Like you said, they can't really just have these games just on one console. Remember, even back then, Nintendo didn't want to release games on each NHD. Remember the HD format? It was like the strictly old school style. And I'm like, bro, the SD is not, after a while, come on, man. And they made that change a couple years after, you know what I'm saying?
I'm going to disagree. And the reason I disagree on that, Nintendo historically has tied their games into a unique feature with their hardware. They synergize. So I don't see them. Excuse me.
We are back.
Yeah, go for it. But I don't see Nintendo putting games on PC that don't synergize with the hardware that they have on the Switch or whatever the next iteration console that they have. If they do, I think it'll be a long time coming. I honestly don't see it happening in this decade. It'd probably be well until the 2030s before they're doing it, because again, from a financial standpoint, Nintendo still makes hand over fist, and they have the highest attach rate for their games to their hardware. Again, if we want to dive back into the financials of what we just saw with PlayStation as an example, there's a low attach rate, you know, to their hardware, to their games. When you look at they announced what The Last of Us Part Two, they've only sold 10 million copies of it, which is actually surprising when you think that there's 100 million plus PlayStation 4s out there. And then you throw on top of that, what is it, 20 million PlayStation 5s out there, and they've only to date sold 10 million copies of that game. It's a phenomenal game. It's one of the best games ever made from one of the best studios in the world. You would think the attach rate would be higher to that. So that, again, when we talk about competition from the PlayStation side, from the Xbox side, what can they do to have a higher attach rate for their internal, their first party games? I don't know if a game like The Last of Us isn't attaching the same way that a game like a Mario Kart 8 is. Why is that? And I think a lot of that has to do with Nintendo games can only be played on Nintendo hardware, and they do something unique with that Nintendo hardware that their competition simply does not do. I mean, we've obviously seen that PlayStation and Xbox in the late, you know, 2000s tried to do something unique with PlayStation Move and Kinect, and their audiences didn't gravitate towards those. You had to buy more hardware, it's more expensive. I've always said one of the big mistakes that Xbox One made was Kinect was viewed as $100 tax for that console, whereas you're basically charging me $100 extra for this camera that you're telling me I have no choice to have. Where instead, they should have probably, and again, I am in the financials, I don't know why those decisions are made, but if they would have put that Xbox One out, excuse me, at $399 with Kinect baked in, which now in turn says developers, you can take advantage of this hardware because it's a part of the experience, I think Kinect could have had more success. Same with PlayStation Move. I think if PlayStation would have continued Move, you know, into the PS4 era and would have had that built into it at that same price point, maybe that's financially not feasible, but you probably would have seen more developers take advantage of that stuff. That's why even with PSVR, it's going to be VR2 and even the current one, it's going to be interesting to see what the attach rate of that hardware is going to look like for a VR experience, because, you know, rumored it's looking like PSVR2 is going to be $500 at launch. And are people going to be willing to spend that for an experience that is still niche comparative to the rest of the gaming industry? Right. So, yeah, a lot of this stuff goes into price and attach rates. And can I give you enough incentive to want to take advantage of this at the current price point? It is going to be interesting to see with PSVR2. I personally want to go get PlayStation VR2. I most likely will, even at $500, because I want to experience that. I think the technology and the hardware is at a place now where I want to start taking advantage of it. I had almost bought a Valve Index right when the pandemic was happening. The pandemic happened, I was like, I better save my money. But I think now going into 2023, I do think I'll probably invest in PlayStation VR2 because I want to try it out. But at the same time, for the overall consumers, if it's $500, I kind of thought the sweet spot would have been $300 if they could have eaten that cost. I think you see mass adoption. But I do wonder at $500 if we're going to see that mass adoption, because, again, you're basically telling someone you got to buy a PlayStation 5 at $500, and now you got to buy the VR component of it for an additional $500. So you're talking $1,000 investment if you want to get into VR on the PlayStation. And not everyone can afford to do that. Not everyone, even if they can, are going to be willing to do that. There's going to have to be enough gaming incentive there, experiences, new experiences on the VR side to make people that are going to want to jump into that. So we'll see.
Man, $500 is the rumor?
That's the rumor. Because remember, the What the hell is it called? The Facebook one. Just they increased the price.
Oculus. Yes. Oculus.
Yeah, they just increased the price on it. So the speculation now is VR2 is probably going to be like $500. That's just a rumor. Excuse me. I've thought the most it would have been was $400, but and even that's kind of pricey, obviously. But $500, I think it's going to be hard. Now, when I look at it from what you're getting, is it worth $500? Yes, it is. But that not everyone's going to see that value. Not everyone can afford that at that price point. That's going to be the tough sell.
And here's the thing, Paris. If PlayStation games been coming out and it's $70, mm-hmm. and the sales numbers is not that great, what makes you think that a PSVR 2 at that price is going to help PlayStation? I think that's a terrible idea. If you really want to get a mass market of people just buying also the console and the VR, have it sell it for like the loss, right? And recover that on the software and the services. And it will be smart for
we're in agreement, and that's what I've always assumed that was going to happen with PSVR 2. I'm just talking about speculation. This is all just speculation. This isn't trust me. In a perfect world, that thing is $299. In a perfect world, I think to me that's a sweet spot to get mass adoption for people to pick that thing up along with a PlayStation 5. It's just looking like where we currently are in the world with inflation and everything that's going on, that's not going to be realistic in 2023. I think to your point, if they could get it at $400, I think that's going to be a lot more tolerable than $500. I think $500, that's just a number people are going to see. And I think there's going to be an instant rejection. Look, hardcore people are going to spend the $500 for it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking the more casual audience. I'm talking to people that are on the fence about VR. If I'm on the fence about VR, do I really want to invest $500 into it? That's what I'm saying. We'll see. Look, again, hope I'm wrong. This is me saying it will be. Yeah. This is just
a conversation.
Yeah, this is just the speculation that when we're seeing the price increase on Oculus, there's inflation right now. You look at the tech that's inside PSVR 2, can they realistically deliver that under a $499 price point? We'll see. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, if you think about it, Paris, and look, by far, this is my favorite console of this generation, the Xbox Series S. Mm-hmm. Cheaper, love the design, smaller. I download games digital. I don't buy physical games anymore. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like a collector's, that's like rare. But, you know, having it at a cheap price is going to be helpful for any company. It was helpful for PlayStation once they released the slim version of their console a couple years back for the PlayStation 4. It sold even more because now people that waited for the price to drop, now they're going to the store, they buying bundles, the holiday season, all that stuff. Like, let me tell you this, man. This holiday season, you're going to see a lot of Xbox Series S's, bundles, all kinds of stuff this holiday season at different stores, man. Because there's still people to this day, Paris, that, first of all, they can't find the consoles, but they're also waiting for the price to drop for both Xbox and PlayStation. Once that happens, dude, a whole mob of people are going to buy those consoles, man. They're just waiting for the price drop, man. And I think by next year, we're probably going to see something similar to the PlayStation 5, like a slim, similar to the Xbox Series S, PS5, a slim version, sometime next year. I can see that happening, man, for sure. Because there's still people that they haven't even bought a PlayStation 5. They still to this day are playing games on a PS4, and that's why we're seeing still to this day games coming out on both consoles, PS4 and PS5, because there's still a market out there, man, that are not going to buy a PS5 for that price. So having that VR, and I hope it's not $500, that's just not going to be good, man. I think people are going to wait until that also drops in the future.
But to buy it. I agree, but the problem with that is going to be is, are we going to see enough, both their internal studios, I think their internal studios will, but are we going to see enough third-party support, development support from games if there's a small attach rate with the VR? It's like, why am I investing all this money into making this VR game for PlayStation VR 2 and I'm only selling it to an audience of a million people, as an example, right? If there's a small audience, and even in that small audience, you're going to have a smaller percentage that potentially is going to pick up your game. Am I going to get enough return on investment to want to spend the years making this game and the money I have to invest in the whole thing, right? A lot of that factors in. And this is what I'm saying. You got to look at the business side of it. And trust me, I am not any kind of business guru, financial thing. I'm not going to be like some YouTube video I saw where dude broke out a calculator trying to explain stuff.
Wait, are you serious?
Oh, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious.
No, I don't believe that.
No, it happens. It did happen. Only reason I know is because my name can't stay out of this dude's mouth, so I keep getting sent videos. But the dude had a freaking calculator trying to justify, you know, a certain sales number, whatever. It was idiotic. But the point is,
yeah,
I'm not pretending to be some business expert that knows how this works. I'm just trying to look at this from a logical standpoint. And again, how many people are going to pick up that VR at 500 before it drops in price? And then, yeah, you know, we know their internal studios at Horizon Games coming out. I'm sure Valve's going to bring over Half-Life Alyx and stuff like that. I'm sure you're going to see backwards compatibility with the current PSVR 1. Games that are going to be on there. But I mean, is EA going to invest? Is Ubisoft going to invest? Is Take-Two going to you see what I'm saying? Are we going to start seeing Devolver Digital, et cetera, on down the line? Are we going to start seeing them investing and making VR games if they're not seeing enough people actually pick up the hardware to experience it? That factors in too. This is why I hope it's not $500, because I think you're going to see a very low attach rate if it is at 500.
Do you remember, and I'm going to take it back. I love talking about history, man. But do you remember when Sega Genesis released the Sega CD, and after that was like the 32X or something like that? I feel when companies release a console and they have like something like that that didn't came with the console at launch, the attach rate is going to be low, and there's not going to be a lot of companies creating content for that device. Well, it's similar to like Kinect. Like, I feel like Kinect came out at the end. Yeah, what's up?
You had your headphones off because that's what I was talking
about. Oh, you did? Sorry.
No. I'm actually glad you brought it up, because what I was saying because remember, what was I saying back then on GTR? I go, Kinect is the $100. It's the Kinect tax for the Xbox One. You charge an extra $100 compared to your competition, and the only difference was that freaking camera. Because I think another thing people forget is originally rumored PlayStation 4 was going to have that camera, their camera bundled in, and then they took it out and they charged $399, and the rest is history. Whereas Xbox didn't do that, and they charge you $100. Because if you think, because exactly what you're saying, what Xbox was gambling on is, we're going to guarantee developers that camera is, everyone's going to have that camera, so you can start making games that take advantage of the camera because you know everybody has it. Whereas ultimately, because you charge an extra $100, it forced Microsoft to take the camera out and reduce the price of the Xbox One. Now there was no guarantee Kinect was going to be in there. So guess what? Developers weren't making anything that took advantage of Kinect. So it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Same thing that you're talking about. What was that? Sega with the 32X
and the Sega CD
and all that. Mm-hmm. There was no guarantee that everyone was going to have that. So why am I making games for it? Why am I utilizing developer time and money and all that to make something that not everyone's going to have?
But I mean, for the last generation, is it a PSVR, the first one, is that a success?
I think it's a moderate success. It was enough of a success that clearly PlayStation's going to invest in a second generation of it.
Yeah. I mean, Xbox did the same with Kinect, and that was not a success.
Yeah, because...
Well, for both.
Do we really need to roll the tape back to 2013, 2014? The reason Kinect failed, it was because that damn thing was $500. And people were like, I am not buying an Xbox One when I can go buy a PlayStation 4 for $100 or less, and I don't want this camera anyways.
Yeah.
I was saying it then, and it's exactly what happened. You know, you tried to force a camera that not everyone wanted, and you were like, and I'm going to charge you $100 more for it. Hell no. Nobody was going to do that. Didn't make sense. The only way Kinect would have worked is if the Xbox One was $399 at launch, and it included the camera, and then you started seeing games that came out that took full advantage of it. We never saw that. never got to that opportunity to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't see PSVR 2 that seeing it as a next success. I mean, again, it all depends on the price, but I just can't see it. A lot of people rather just buy the console than buying an extra device to add in the console. Like, if you go back in history, it just, there's nothing that I can think of that has been a success that came out after the console, of any console. Can you think of any? Because I can't think of...
No, you're correct. No, you're 100% correct. We've not seen that work throughout the history of gaming, the 40 plus years of gaming. We've not seen an add-on become this runaway hit. The only way it works is if you include it from day one, which, again, this is what we're talking about. This is what Microsoft was attempting to do with Kinect for Xbox One. But then you tried to charge me more. It's like, that doesn't work either. If you're going to do it, you got to eat that cost if you want that pack in to actually work. So look, I'm not going to go as extreme to say that VR 2 is going to not be a success. I think that opportunity is clearly there, but a lot of that is going to have to do with the pricing of it. Because I think what VR will do compared to something like the 32X or the Sega CD or something like that is you're giving me an experience that I cannot replicate on the console. You're giving me again a virtual reality experience. So I think there will be enough of an audience out there that will want to take advantage of it. I just don't think there's going to be enough of an audience that would take advantage of it at $500. I think that's the issue that they're going to potentially see with that. Not to mention you have to buy a PlayStation 5 as well. I think that's also part of it. If VR 2 worked, if I could plug it into my PC as an example along with a PlayStation 5 and I could still play those games, now we can have a different conversation.
Really? You think so? You think that we can have a different conversation if it will work for both?
Because now you're telling me the existing PC audience, they already got their PC. They're already playing games on it. You're just telling them, hey, go buy this VR headset. The same as you would buy a Valve Index or an Oculus. This is no different. Go plug it in.
$500. For $500, it will be a success.
Potential. Well, Valve Index is $1,000.
Yeah, but that's I don't know, Paris. I don't know. I just can't see it. I can't see it. Hey, look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I just can't see. We even had this debate back in 2020. We were talking about Half-Life coming into the VR and everything, and we were saying, well, you were actually saying, no, it's going to be a success. I think this is going to be the game changer. I couldn't see it back then, and still I can't see it to this day of VR being like a big hit. I just can't see it, man. I think, to me, it's a gimmick. To me, as someone that tried to play VR during that time too, it's not for everyone, and I just don't feel that people are going to go and buy a device like that to make their experience even better. Like, they'd rather put more money on a PC or on a console than actually getting a VR device. I just can't see it, but that's just me.
Yeah, don't get me wrong here. I'm not the VR, you know, pope or something that's advocating for it. Because if you remember, I've said from the get, I would not get a VR 1.0. I was not going to get the original VR hardware that came out or those original VR game experiences, because I was like, I'm gonna wait until VR 2.0. I still say we are now at that point with Valve Index. We got this PlayStation VR 2 coming out. We have a Half-Life Alyx type experience. We'll see what this Horizon experience is going to be on PlayStation. I do think we're at the doorstep of VR 2.0, and I'm willing to invest in it because I love tech and I love, you know, trying new things. Now I'm willing to invest in it, but I'm the exception, not the rule. When it comes to that, for everything that you were saying, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with pricing. A lot of it's going to have to do with, show me enough gaming experiences or other type of experiences in the VR landscape that is worth my investment. I still don't think we're there with that, unfortunately. I thought Half-Life Alyx was going to be the tipping point for that, to start seeing more. I think the pandemic obviously has had something to do with this. I think some of the experiences we may have gotten have been delayed. Inflation. Again, Valve Index is still $1,000. They ain't lowered the price of that thing yet. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Even this that I brought up during the podcast with Miles, I brought up the gaming hub on Samsung. Love the concept. It works great. It only works on TVs for 2022 only, right? Mm-hmm. I bought recently TVs back in November. I bought two TVs, a 55-inch and a 65-inch. Mm-hmm. I can't play those games, xCloud games, on those two TVs. Mm-hmm. It's almost new, right? Mm-hmm. How Samsung is going to convince all these gamers to go buy a brand new 2022 TV if they have an old one, which they just recently purchased online or in stores, right? How are they going to convince them, like, hey, buy this TV so you could play your S-Cloud, your Luna, your whatever features in there? I just can't see it, dude. I can't see it. I'm glad that they're going to like different events to show hands-on and everything like that. But to me, to be a better success, have that feature on at least a couple of different models of Samsung so more people could get into the TV and the services they're planning to have in there. Or try a different way where you could even have a creator to have their that service at home so they could show it. Because as of right now, I've been noticing that everybody's saying, oh, but that's, you're controlling the message. You're at an event having this and you're letting people play and you record it. But how many people are actually having it at home, man? It's very hard to convince the regular consumer that that is going to work at home. It's pretty, pretty hard. So I just don't know. I can't see it. So let's talk about that, Paris. Your thoughts about the gaming hub and Samsung and all the stuff that they're planning to do in the future with.
I've already talked about this. Everything that you just said.
Okay. Well, we'll move on.
No, my point is I've been saying this since Summer Game Fest and everything that you just said. Trust me, because I've had various conversations. Samsung knows. A matter of fact, if you go to that official Samsung Gaming Twitter account, they've even answered people about the very thing that you're saying, and they are looking at bringing that experience to other models, other years of their TVs. It won't just be 2022, but they just don't have anything officially to announce right now. I've talked to some people at Xbox as well about the very thing that you're saying, that, hey, you got to get this in people's hands. You can't just keep doing this at Summer Game Fest and Comic-Con and stuff like that. You got to get this in people's hands in real world environments, in their homes, not in controlled environments, if you want to convince people that this works. The way I look at this is just a soft launch. This is just to say that, hey, the technology works and this is the thing. The mass rollout and adoption of this, we're probably not looking at this until 2023. And from an Xbox perspective, it's truly not that Xbox app isn't really going to be a thing until you partner up with other TV manufacturers like LG, as an example, Sony, even, believe it or not. And they come out with that dongle. Until they come out with that dongle that I can just plug into any TV and I can go do the cloud streaming thing. I mean, this is just a soft launch.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else, Paris?
No.
That was a really great conversation.
Hey, freestyled the whole thing. Look, for an hour. Freestyled for an hour.
We had notes on stuff that we want to talk about. We scratched that whole thing.
Literally off the top of my head. But hey, this is what happens when you've been doing it for freaking 15+ hours. That's
so long. Yeah, when you do it for so long, you're like, hey, let's talk about this.
You know, it's funny. Kind of funny, they did the As Dust Falls. The live event in LA. And I originally was just going to just go watch and obviously support. I wasn't going to be a part of the show. And Greg got COVID because Greg was going to host it. And then it was just funny how it all worked. Like, Mike immediately had to step up and be the host, and he was amazing, knocked it out. And then, you know, Greg asked me to jump in and, you know, be a part of it as well. And his whole thing was, he was like, dude, you've been podcasting for like 15 years. You do this like in your sleep. I have no worries at all. It's true. I don't know what I was doing. I just went up on stage and just started talking.
And freestyling. Yeah. But honestly, I think that's when you could actually get like the best content, when you freestyle.
Yeah.
And it's not planned. I mean, we have moments where even interviews, like the interview with Phil Spencer, we freestyle that one, you know. Like I even freestyle multiple major interviews. Like I had no notes. I was just like, I have questions that I'm just curious, I'm gonna ask, you know.
No,
it came out great.
Yeah, and it comes out to this, you know, like when we say freestyle, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, you asking a question or a topic in the moment, but that comes from years of preparation and educating yourself on the topics in the industry and the people that you're talking to, so that when you do have something like that, you can just do it. So, yeah, I mean, everything that we just talked about, you know, here with the history of competition, I was able to say that off the top of my head because, you know, I've been educating myself about the history of gaming literally my entire life. Obviously, I've experienced it, you know, from an early age, but these are things that either I experienced in the moment or I've gone back and researched to understand why certain decisions were made and why you're seeing certain things the way they are. You know, it isn't coming from a point of ignorance where you're just pulling something out of your tuchus and making up things. It's like, no, these are all based in historical factual things.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, and it's fun. It's fun chatting about this because, yo, there was stuff that we brought up that I totally forgot, man, for years, especially like seeing how PlayStation started releasing games on disc and all that stuff. I'm like, oh man, I totally forgot about that. You know, it was game changer back in those days.
Well, again, this whole thing started, and we wrap it up here, but this whole thing started because you saw, and this is where social media is a blessing and a curse, because people can obviously voice their opinion and say whatever they want, and that's fine. But this was spurred on by a tweet from an individual who their entire online persona and purpose is to argue about how great PlayStation is and how terrible Xbox is, right? It's not balanced. It's not, let's look at the positives and negatives of both sides. Yeah. And it was like, you said that, honestly, you said it out of ignorance. And it's like, no, trust me when I tell you, you don't want to be in a gaming world where there isn't competition. And here's why. And this whole conversation was looking at the history of what competition has done in this industry. And when there isn't competition, or when a company thinks they have enough of an advantage, they don't have to worry about the competition. That's how you get a $600 PS3. That's how you get a $500 Xbox One with a Kinect in it, right? When they think, oh, I don't have to worry about what the competition does, they're going to buy it anyways. That's how you get eventually $100 games and more expensive consoles if you don't think there's competition that you need to worry about. So trust me, you always want competition, no matter your platform of choice.
Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the consumers win.
Yep, 100%.
Yep, yep. All right, we're going to wrap it up here, man. That was a lot of fun here. Guys, thank you so much for listening to episode 1218 here at Gamer Tag Radio. Remember, head over right now to any podcast app. And thank you, Paris, for the sneezing and coughing. Thank you so much. Go right now to any podcast app. Search for Gamer Tag Radio and subscribe, follow us, and also, more importantly, post your review. It will help us out so much, man. All right, if you would like to be part of our family discussion, do you agree, do you disagree, conversation that we had today, please call us, email us, and here's how.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, we can wrap it up. Anything else, Paris? Anything else?
No, I think that's it, man.
Yeah. All right, guys. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.